the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score! And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
All right, it is Wednesday, April 3rd. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. Happy Wednesday. On Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcast. Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson of Post Media along with you from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Hi, Wes.
How are you, buddy?
You know that answer.
You're looking good. That's all that matters.
That's not even true. Hey, I know that the team's out of the playoffs, and I know that the bigger picture is what matters here. I also know how difficult this must be to play out the string for a lot of veterans in that room. At least I think I know, having never been in their position, having never been an NHLer or a pro athlete. I don't know, but I think I have a pretty good idea of how difficult this must be, playing out a string, going down the stretch like this. But I also know how adamant this group is about setting a standard or building an identity and making sure that they finish the season with a few non-negotiables, hitting work ethic targets and compete level targets and those type of things.
Yeah. You know what wasn't the standard?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of what we saw on Tuesday night. And not for a lack of effort, I don't think. I don't think it was for a lack of trying as much as I just don't think they were prepared to be good. I don't think that's like a conscious thing. Like, I'm not showing up, or I'm not going to be ready. But
yeah, they didn't look checked out.
They just looked not ready to go.
Yeah, it was a slop fest.
It just was, and was so completely the opposite of what we had seen in their last game. And I think that's the most disappointing part, is that they were rightfully so very proud of themselves, and proud of themselves is maybe the wrong way to put it. They were rightfully so very, very happy with the way they played on Saturday against LA. They felt like that was a game that they could build on. They felt like that was a game that could kind of be a benchmark for them to continue to emulate as they do play out the string. And then, as Ryan Huska very eloquently described on Tuesday night, they didn't come anything close to that against the Ducks on Tuesday.
5-on-5, our play against LA was really good. Tonight, we were awful.
And I think that was my biggest takeaway. I mean, that's about as direct as you're going to get in terms of what the coach thinks of the effort. Saturday was such a quality win, and the group was understandably feeling very good about the way they played and very good about how that was in line with what their identity needs to be. So I get why people 3 nights later on the outside were really upset about what they saw. And I get why people on the inside, management, coaching staff, players, were really upset about how things went against Anaheim. And I think that's an understandable thing. They are trying to hold themselves to a higher standard here, and that didn't come close to it against the Ducks.
Yeah, we don't hear Ryan Huska use the word awful very often. And for him to come out and describe and accurately describe what he witnessed last night as that, it really tells you a lot. There wasn't, geez, outside of that Kadri line and outside of Mackenzie Weegar playing his butt off, there just was not very much to like from the Flames last night. And I think I was going to say the troubling part, and I don't know if that, I don't want to make more of it than it is, but right now, the Kings game and the way they played against the Kings was the blip recently. Last night wasn't the blip. We're talking about a team that has lost 6 out of 7 now, has not always lost with as uninspired type performance as they lost with last night. But I think that's where you heard some of the frustrations last night, and I'm sure we'll play especially some of what was heard from Mackenzie Weegar.
Indeed.
But yeah, you did snap out of that skid against the Los Angeles Kings, and you played what you thought was one of your more complete games of the season. Yet when you back it up with just a total dud or a total dog or a total whatever you want to call it against a really bad team, it has to leave a sour taste because it's just not close to that standard that they're talking about. It's just absolutely not good enough. No matter what your roster looks like or where you're at, you know, on your retool road, on paper, you should have been the better team on the ice last night, and it just never looked that way.
And you know, had they been in a, if the approach to the game or the approach to the third period had been executed the way the Flames wanted it to, they win that hockey game 2-2 after 40 minutes of play. But they go out and they play as engaged and as dialed in as they were against LA, even for that one period, or even as engaged or dialed in as they were in the second period of Tuesday's game, they probably win that hockey game going away. Because they were, after the second period, they were up 2-1 in the second. Anaheim gets a somewhat fortunate bounce on the power play to tie it 2-2. But the Flames are still in a very good spot to win that hockey game and win it convincingly. And instead, in the first 5 minutes and 9 seconds, 2-2 turns into 4-2 for the visitors. And that's about all they wrote. Like that,
just felt like it was done at that moment, didn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It really did. And maybe the most telling thing to me was the final 4 minutes or so in a 5-3 hockey game, which is typically the time that an NHL head coach and this head coach would pull their goaltender and see if they can get that extra goal, see if they can maybe spark something. And, you know, I definitely, as the final minutes went on, was like, huh, that's interesting that they're not pulling Markstrom. And it was Kelly Rudy who, so what happens is I watch upstairs for the first two and a half periods, and then I come down to the hot stove and I turn on the kind of raw feed of the Sportsnet telecast, which just gives you some cool camera angles, and it's not delayed. And Kelly Rudy's point on the telecast was they just don't have the juice, and he wondered aloud if not pulling Markstrom was just because they kind of coaching staff just didn't feel they had it.
Yeah.
And when Ryan Huska spoke on
before we get to Ryan Huska's explanation, what did you think?
Well, that I thought, well, Kelly Rudy's a smart man.
Yeah.
That registered with me immediately. I don't know if I would have gone there initially, but as soon as I heard Kelly Rudy say it, I was like, that's got to be it. And that was something that we spoke a little bit about on Tuesday's postgame show, and Ryan Huska addressed it after a practice on Wednesday about, and turns out that Kelly Rudy was bang on.
I didn't think we were at the point with the way we played that we deserved to have the goalie pulled, and I looked at it as we'd end up 6-3, and you know, I don't by any stretch of the imagination, I'm not saying that we're not going to come back and win a game, but I just didn't have the impression from my team last night that we were good enough.
So is that a message to the group, and kind of subtle message to the group?
Well, they could take it however they want to take it, I guess. It's for me, that was my thought on it, and that's why it was not done.
So it wasn't not done to show up the team, but hey, that's a pretty clear message from your head coach.
To me, it boils down to everything we just heard from Ryan Huska could have been summed up in two words. And this is how I felt about them not pulling the goalie last night. Why bother?
Yeah.
It was one of those nights. Like there was no pushback when it became 4-2. And I know that they did score a goal, and so I suppose there's a bit of pushback, at least on the stat sheet, but they were just barely hanging around on the fringes of that third period. And
Five shots the entire period.
Yeah, and while Ryan Huska wasn't going to describe it publicly as a message, it's absolutely a message, at least, buddy, that's the way I see it.
I love that he said they can take it how they want.
Yeah, like that's a shot across the bow. You know what, guys, why bother? Jacob, stay down there. These guys don't, you know, let's not give Anaheim the freebie. These guys... I don't have six guys looking down the bench. I don't even have six guys to send out right now. So why bother? And, you know, you don't want to see, I guess, your coach do that on a regular basis, because I think it could get taken the wrong way. But it was one of those that I thought, yeah, good for you.
Feels like every year, or, you know, like there's always with each coach, feels like there's always kind of one of those moments. I know where you're going.
Are we thinking of the same one? Probably. Absolute favorite. Go ahead.
Have you seen where you are in the standings?
No. My favorite was, do you remember?
If you go the one that I was thinking of first, then we're going to be way too much on the same page.
When Brent Sutter sent out five defensemen D-men. At the end of a power play. Like, it was, I want to say, would it have been Warner and Regier?
It would. Warner may have led the injury may have had Warner on the shelf. He may have been doing the scouting thing upstairs at the time. But it would have been like the Regier, Bomeister.
For those who don't,
I think Jim Vandermeer might have been one of the guys who went out.
So for those who don't remember, the Flames were going through an awful sort of funk, I believe, with their power play, and in one game the power play was just awful. And so toward the end of a man advantage, Brent Sutter sent out five defensemen, just like you guys go out. I will never forget watching them try to figure out who would take the face off as they go out, and it's like, they're kind of looking around. Huh. Okay. We'll have to look that up. I wonder who took the draw.
I would actually really like to know that. I'm going to have to go look that up.
We're going to have to do a little Googling on that one. But that was one of those, like, Jerome and probably Craig Conroy and whoever, you guys can take that however you want to. That's a little message from the coach. And I thought last night, I thought two things. I thought that they, as Ryan Huska said, really didn't earn.
Did not deserve it.
Yeah, it really didn't earn it. And I also, to be honest, buddy, I as I jumped in my car and I was listening to you on the post game show, I was kind of surprised by the uproar about it. Like, to me, I just sort of shrugged my shoulders at it. I was surprised that there was so much focus on it. I certainly get it now, and I don't want to come across like I'm criticizing anyone who was calling or texting in about it, but I guess at the end of that game, I just didn't expect that to sort of become the focus. And yet in a lot of ways, and you can answer this better than me, but it sure felt like it last night, didn't it?
There definitely were a lot of questions about it on the text line.
Yeah.
That's why it was, that's why it was on my mind to make sure to ask Ryan about that after practice today, because it was something that I saw a lot on Twitter and a lot on the text line after the loss. I'm like, I'm just really curious if Kelly Rudy, and thus what I parroted from Kelly Rudy, was correct, and that was turns out that's Kelly's usually pretty astute on these things, and he was bang on.
Yeah, and at that point, if it was a one goal game, I certainly would have had a different opinion on it. Like if
but it was a 5-3 game.
Yeah,
right?
It's a two goal game, and so thinking that when you've had five shots, if they'd even had that many up to that point, you're going to score two. The way that you're performing was probably pretty far-fetched. If it was a 4-3 game, that would have been a much stronger message. Now that I'm thinking about it, it's too bad Joel Hanley was hurt, because they could have put out 6D.
They could have done the 6D. Some of the other ones that I remember over the years, I mean, the one from Bob Hartley is when he scratched Boma, Monahan, and Gaudreau, but we all know the reasoning for that. It was less a message to the team and more a message to the players. We all remember the old Glenn Gulletson stick toss. We also remember the crumpled. We crumpled. We remember that one.
Yeah. The stick toss was, how it was a day.
That was a day.
Bob had another one. Trying to remember if it was Bob who basically wrapped up practice about 5 minutes in?
Yep.
One time,
sent him right off the ice.
Why bother?
Yep. Daryl Sutter has the one that Conroy always tells, where he benched Conroy and Aginla and was like, hey, you know what? You guys are doing enough. you're doing as much here on the bench as you're doing out there. So I know you guys don't want to get hit. So like, we'll stay. Connie tells it clearly better than I do, but I remember that one.
Can I share the five guys on the power
yes,
play?
Yes, please.
From what I've been able to find, Jay Bouwmeester.
Was Vandermeer one of them?
No. But there's a couple deep cuts in here nonetheless. Okay. Jay Bouwmeester.
Yeah.
Mark Giordano.
Yeah.
Corey Sarich. Brendan Mickelson.
Ooh. I saw, yeah. I saw Brendan Mickelson was up in the press box on Tuesday night.
Megan's brother, of course. And Anton Babchuk.
Well, he was a power play mainstay.
Not sure who took the face off yet. Still working on that. Still working on
it. Do you have the game sheet from?
I got the date, so we'll. This must be great radio.
No, you know what? This is sometimes what. So that what year was that?
December 1st, 2010.
So that would have been the 2009-10 season, December 1st. Hey.
Yeah.
Now I have to go find out who.
Even
took
if
that
you can just off. Look up the the face off percentages, you'll probably find the one defenseman who took a draw.
That's what I'm. So it was it was a game against who?
Vancouver.
Vancouver Canucks, eh? You're right. This is not always the greatest of radio when you're hearing guys look things up, but that's where we are. That's where things sit right now. Vancouver Canucks, Calgary Flames, December 1st.
You got it?
I will in a second.
We should be like playing some music or something, but Cam didn't turn my Burley on.
I can't tell who took the face off.
We'll keep working on it.
Yeah, we'll keep working on it.
And keep listening, please. You anyway, want to know who took the face off, too.
I really do. I want to know. Now, I'm really curious to see now how they respond to it. And honestly, it probably is a situation where they do respond quite well Thursday in Winnipeg for a few different reasons. First of all, they've got a game they got to respond to. Second of all, they have a little bit of a propensity of playing up and playing down, right? That's been one of the stories of the season is how they play up to opposition, play down to opposition. That has very much been part of the season. So I'm curious how they respond, but I thought Mackenzie Weegar was pretty, and we know how emotional Mackenzie is, how much he despises losing, all those types of things. And I thought he had the right message coming out of the game on Tuesday night when he spoke postgame. You were there. I only play this stuff after the fact in the postgame show. You were there asking questions in the scrum, but he seemed like a pretty visibly angry, frustrated guy after how things went, after he played more than 28 minutes on Tuesday night.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of the key part. I don't have his stats in front of me, but it was 28 minutes. He had two assists. I think he had five hits. He had three blocked shots. Like, we're talking about when Ryan Huska came out post game and said we only had a handful of guys show up tonight. There's no doubt Mackenzie Weegar was in the handful, and that's what I thought made his post game comments so powerful last night. It was really a plea, if that's the right word, to his teammates to start showing up for each other. And That's the sort of stuff that resonates. And, you know, we all remember Nikita Zadorov's trying to play his individuals comments earlier this season. And those ruffled, as we know now, a lot of feathers behind the scenes, because I'm probably putting words in people's mouths, but there was a feeling of, who is this guy to come out and say that right now? Who is...
Yeah, then there was a little bit of like, Leave that with us. Leave it in the room.
And are you really the guy who should be popping off in the media about us playing as individuals? And I imagine the reaction to what Mackenzie Weegar said last night will be the exact opposite.
Yeah.
This is a guy who wore it on his sleeve last night, really has all year. He's going to hit 200 blocked shots. He still has a good shot, or a shot anyways, at 20 goals. And those are just the obvious stats. This is a guy who you're not questioning his give a hoot, and so I think that made his comments all the more powerful.
This was Mackenzie Weegar post game on Tuesday. Just a little bit of and the message kind of you'll be able to pick up on a very clear message from Mackenzie Weegar after Tuesday's loss.
I've said this, you know, throughout the year, which is why it's kind of disappointing tonight. Is, you know, I know that I personally have more care for the next guy beside me to play better. I know that, there's a lot of guys in this room that can play better for that next guy beside you. I thought tonight it was one of those games where it was kind of, you take a look in the mirror tonight, it was one of those games. You know, that effort's not acceptable, especially when we're trying to, you know, we got a younger group now. We got to set the standard now.
I mean, it would be so easy for this to be a season ending against Anaheim when you guys are out of the playoffs and just not be going. So what is, you know, keeping that fire going, keeping you angry when performances aren't there?
I mean, I'm just, you know, I think we're just competitors at the end of the day. You know, I find motivation, you know, every day to come play the, you know, the greatest game in the world. You know, it's, you don't take that for granted here. I don't think anybody does, but, you know, it's those things that keeps you coming back to the rink and wanting to play your best is for the next guy beside you. We've come so far, so many relationships were built this, you know, this season, and, you know, it's that passion that you bring to the rink every day. You know, it wasn't there tonight.
Because isn't that the season in a nutshell, consistency? You guys have used it a lot. It's not there.
Yeah.
You just came off what you guys said was maybe your best performance of the year, most complete, and now this one's, you know, one of your worst. Is it your season in a nutshell, really?
Yeah, well, there's been lots of ups and downs for sure. The consistency, I would say, I guess, wouldn't be there. And that's something that we're going to have to work on and build on, you know, come next year for sure. You know, if you want to be a great team in this league, you got to consistently win. And we're gonna need that. So I guess you could sort of say that. But, you know, for the remainder of the year, we need to bounce back and just start playing for one another. I don't care if we lose the next eight games. You know, come to battle and work for each other.
And that you get a pretty clear message from Mackenzie Weegar. Okay, there's eight games to go here. We know where we are. But we've got an obligation for the guy next to us to go out and play better than we played tonight. That was kind of the,
yeah.
If I were to paraphrase or Reader's Digest what I heard from Mackenzie Weegar, that would be how I would do it.
Yeah, and I thought the sort of last part of it was the strongest. I listen, we know where we're heading. I don't really care what the end result every night is. If we show up and play for each other, that's something we can kind of hang our hats on. And that's where, you know, I think there's people that are sick of hearing about the standard already, but I do think it means something. I do think that there's buy-in to that in the room. We just didn't, like, we didn't see it last night. And yet, maybe as encouraging as anything is what we saw after. Like, those sort of comments from Mackenzie Weegar, wouldn't you be more... I don't know if more concerned is the way to put it, but wouldn't it be more alarming if they just kind of said, nah, yeah, nah, that's the way it goes.
Yep.
You know, Mackenzie Weegar was ticked. That stuff that he was saying, he was speaking very much from the heart. He was speaking with a purpose there. Michael Backlund was as out of sorts, maybe even out of character as I've seen him post game. Yeah. He was frustrated. He was didn't know what to say. Clearly, as the captain, you could tell how much he was wearing the fact that his team wasn't prepared to play. Like the things that you saw in the locker room last night.
It was like the Saturday win resonated in a huge way positively, yeah, and it resonated just as much negatively on Tuesday night.
Right. Like, you did not see any emotion on the ice last night, but I think you could sort of look at it as an encouraging sign that you at least saw it behind the scenes.
Yep.
Now, that lip service doesn't go very far. If you come out tomorrow against Winnipeg and you're not ready to play again, we're probably sitting here on Friday having another conversation. But I thought what we heard from Mackenzie Weegar, what we saw more than what we heard from Michael Backlund, I thought that was a real, I suppose, glimpse into how much it did bother that group. Now, you'd like for a team to be able to kind of turn that around on the ice.
Use it the right way, right?
But certainly this wasn't a jump in the car and, oh, well, try again tomorrow type night.
You know, I've said this many times in you know, covering this team and taking phone calls. And, you know, we live in such a day-to-day world, right, where every game feels like a huge win or a huge loss. And
so it makes this fun.
It is.
Yeah.
And so I've said many times after, because every team gets blown out or has really ugly losses throughout a year. And I've said it many times, like, well, we'll learn a lot about this team if, or we'll learn a lot about this team when. And honestly, I think it would be lip service in a lot of situations where the Flames are right now playing out the string for me to say, yeah, we're going to learn a lot about this team down the string and how, but I honestly think we will learn a lot about the group and this leadership group and how much of what we heard Tuesday night was just lip service or was actually something they can put into action. I honestly believe with guys like Mackenzie Weegar, Blake Coleman, Jacob Markstrom, guys who burn as hot as those guys do and are as respected as they are inside that room, I think hearing things like that will rub off in a positive way. And I am expecting a really good game against Winnipeg on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
I think that will tell us a little bit about the group and hopefully it tells us something positive about the group.
And I think you have some kids that run that same sort of hot and just at this point in their NHL careers can't come out and say it. Like Martin Pospisil is as competitive as they come. I think he's a guy who's feeling the same way, right? Braden Pahal was a captain of a championship team in junior for a reason. Connor Zary is a guy whose competitive streak we hear kind of more and more about.
Yeah, ask his stick from Tuesday night.
Yeah, exactly. This is more great radio. Did you happen to clip Huska's answer today when asked about the standard and he said it's not about the young guys?
I didn't, but to paraphrase, basically what he said is, it's not about the young guys, it's about the standards the veterans hold themselves to, is basically what he said.
Yeah, and I thought that was such an important message in itself. You know, we talk at this time of year, for those of us covering, the story is really the future and the young guys, and what can a kid learn from a win like the Kings victory? What can a kid learn from a lesson like, you know, being stapled to the bench for most of the third period last night, like Connor Zary was? What, you know, blah, blah, blah. What are the lessons here? And while Ryan Huska understands the focus there, he said the standard isn't about the young guys here. The standard has to be about our veteran players. And I thought that was another strong message.
Few texts, 960, 960.
Just before the text, can we update the face-off situation?
Yes. So as this text comes in, and we have confirmed on our own, no Flames D took a face-off in that game. Confirmed from NHL.com. Brent Center must have thrown them all out during play on the fly line change, which must have been the way it went.
Which must have been even more chaotic as they tried to figure out their positions out there.
Yeah. Would have been amazing.
We got to try and find the video of that game.
This says, I'm here for it, boys. Haven't heard Vandermeer in forever. He wasn't on the team at that point, by the way, so my recollection was a little off.
Robin Regier, by the way, was dressed that night, left off the PP. He would have been on PPD2.
Even when they throw a 5D, Robin wasn't getting power play time.
Poor guy.
You know what? He made up for it with what he did on other teams' power plays and what he did to other teams' superstar players. Probably made up for the lack of PP time.
Yeah. I can just close my eyes and see Alex Hemsky getting run into the boards over and over and over again.
What was it? The Regier, Adrian Acoin, the tunnel of death?
Is yeah.
Would this
have been a good power play, too.
My favorite lineup, this is from Wedley, Westgarth, McGrattan, Schmid, Blair Jones. Wasn't there the fifth in the brawl against Vancouver?
Yeah.
Who's the fifth?
Do you know? I was there.
I know you were. I don't remember the five.
The Butler did it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Or Chris Butler.
The quick little story time. So the press box in Vancouver essentially curves around the one end of the rink. Like most of them, you just have the kind of length of the ice, but in Vancouver, it actually goes into the corner. So Scott Cruikshank at the time was covering for the Herald and I was covering for the Sun, and we were a few seats apart. And as it worked on the curve, we were sort of looking at each other, and the lineup sheets get delivered before the game. And we both are looking at the lineup sheet. Westgarth starting, McGrattan starting, and we made eye contact with each other at the corner and just sort of raised our eyebrows like, is this actually happening? And I filed my story at the end of the second period that night. I don't think the final score was ever reported. It just didn't matter.
I believe the Canucks won in a shootout that night.
I know Dennis Weidman played like 30.
Because the Flames were down to one defenseman.
Yeah. Amazing.
A few other texts at 960-960. More of the serious variety. We won't learn anything about the group until they play a team at the bottom of the standings again, because there's no question this team comes to play against really good teams. I agree with that. You know what? I want to see them Monday in San Jose, and I want to see them pump a team fighting for the number one overall pick before the season comes to an end. If they were to go into San Jose and roll over the Sharks, I'd like to see that between now and the end of the season.
And maybe to that point, you're in a tough spot if you're the Flames tomorrow, because while, yes, you're sort of expected to show up against a good team because you've had a reputation of showing up against good teams, I suppose people are going to say, well, of course they showed up tonight. Yeah, show it to me on Monday. But on the flip side, if your head coach has just...
Yeah. You also want to see them show up against
Winnipeg. You better show up against Winnipeg.
Randy says, guys, this has been all year. Play good against good teams, bad against bad. What are they? This reads, history repeating itself, gents. They did the same thing against Chicago last year. This reads, that's been the story all year, though. No consistency night in and night out. And finally, from Mike, was it the game yesterday and that Flames team was completely uninterested all night? That terrible Ducks team ran their show as much as a basement-level team could run a show. It's Steinberg and Wes along with you from the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Worried about radon? They install custom mitigation systems to reduce your risk. To find out more, visit dlbasementsystems.com for a free estimate.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for a Wednesday edition of your daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly cleaned car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, you can make it three straight games the Flames have scored a power play goal in. Of course, Saturday's game against L.A., they scored three for the first time, one each against St. Louis, and then on Tuesday night against Anaheim. Overall, they've scored a power play goal in four of their last five. It definitely has been a more productive power play than we've seen for the vast majority of this season here in the last five games. What is there anything different, though, that you're observing? Is there anything different in the way the Flames are executing or approaching their power play that you've seen?
Well, the first thing for me is they moved Mackenzie Weegar back out of the first power play. And I didn't mind Daniil Miramanov in that spot, quarterbacking that unit when he first joined the team. But his plays dipped a little bit for me. So moving your best offensive defenseman, and let's be honest, your best defenseman, period, back out of the first power play, I think has helped. The other thing, they've kept it a little bit simpler. Pucks to the net, bodies to the net, and good things have been happening. And maybe easier said than done, but I think one of the ways they've been able to find those shooting lanes, they've been a lot less static in the offensive zone. Once they get set up, they don't stand in the same spot. They've been moving around a little bit more. I think that's helped break up the penalty killing box, give them some shooting lanes. And you know, shots on goal are great if they go in, but more often than not, they're not going to go directly in the net unless you've set up a screen. So you've got to get traffic in front and create a little bit of chaos. And I think they've done a good job, A, getting pucks to the net, and B, getting bodies to the net. And if you screen the goaltender and the puck goes directly in, great. If he makes a save, you've got someone there to potentially pick up a rebound and put the puck in. So I think they've done a bunch of different things and executed at a higher level, which is with the way they've struggled on the power play this season, been good to see of late.
I definitely think Mackenzie Weegar being back at the top of that first unit has made a difference. You know, we've talked all year about one of his greatest strengths being the fact that he does a really good job of getting pucks through shin pads and threw sticks and skates. Like he's a guy who is able to put a pretty good volume of his shots on net. And that really is, you talk to other defensemen, especially that, you know, that's a talent. That's something that not every guy is good at, and something that I would say Daniil Miramanov is going to need to improve at if he is going to continue to be in the mix for power play duties. And, you know, the other thing that really sticks out for me, guys, and I'm going to focus more on the past two games with this, and obviously they have four power play goals in the past couple of games. Three of those have been a fairly direct result of faceoff wins. And they've done, starting with faceoffs, a lot better job for me of late of winning those one-on-one battles that they weren't winning on the power play. It was Nazem Kadri won two faceoffs that led to goals. We talked earlier this week about how he kind of got jobbed of an assist on Mackenzie Weegar's goal the other night because he was the fourth last to touch it. But that play, very much in what was a terrific performance against the Los Angeles Kings, that play started with Nazem Kadri, and then he won another one that night that soon after winds up in the back of the net. And, you know, last night it was Yegor Sharangovich. That puck gets swiped straight back to Weegar, and the play starts from there. And so I think that has been a big thing too. How often this season have we seen a face-off on the power play and, okay, somebody better start heading back to retrieve it because you lost the draw and you've immediately lost the first 10 or 12 seconds of your power play? It just feels like that hasn't been the case of late.
The thing that, I guess there's two things that pop to mind right away for me outside, because Weegar's a big one. And he moved back to the number one power play for the LA game. And so Uyghur's a big one for me, but you guys did a good job of breaking down why that's so important. So the two other things that pop out to me, the other individual thing is all of a sudden, Andre Kuzmenko looks like a more dynamic offensive player again. And I don't think you can underscore that enough in terms of what that does to Calgary's power play. And I don't think there's any doubt that what's the game when Kuzmenko looked the most engaged? St. Louis, and he's kind of been able to carry that forward in the two games prior, and they've scored a power play goal in all three of those games, and he's been on the ice or part of all of them, or at least in each of the games, he's been on the ice for at least one power play goal or involved in one power play goal. And then the other thing that I think is more of a team thing that I've really noticed, and a couple of players have told me, is that they just have, I don't know why now it's clicking, but they seem to have really bought in on the directness and importance of going to the net and driving to the net and having bodies to the net. Take a look at the power play goal they scored against St. Louis. It's a Jonathan Huberdeau redirect, taking the eyes away from Binnington. You take a look at some of the power play. I mean, the power play goal they scored 8 seconds in on Saturday with Kadri right in front was because where was he? He was knocking on the door to the blue paint. Coleman's game-winning power play goal. There he was. Yeah, it was an easy tap-in for him, but he was fighting for ice. He got knocked down afterwards. He's right in front of the net and driving to the net. And then the power play goal they scored against Anna was, again, nice job by Sharangovich, taking some eyes away and getting a little bit of an inch on that puck with his stick to make it so it just changes direction enough on Dostal to get past him. So that's the team thing that I've noticed, on top of a couple of individual marks with Weegar, as you guys have said, and Kuzmenko as well.
Can I just jump in here? Wilsey, can I jump in really quick? Because I just thought of something, and it goes to what we've been talking about with Mackenzie Weegar and goes to the, you know, point Pat was making as well. I had a conversation, and it was several weeks ago now, with Mark Savard, and we were just kind of going through a couple different things on the power play, and I was struck by something he said to me at that point. He said, for me, the two most important guys on your power play unit are the guy who's up top and your net front presence. And I just was sort of struck by that as I was listening to both of you talk, is like, those are very much, in the case of Kuzmenko and Weegar, those are the guys we're talking about. And I don't think it's probably a coincidence if Mark Savard believes those are the two most important positions on a power play, that this thing has started to roll a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And faceoffs certainly have been important because, let's be honest, at times the Flames have struggled with zone reentries on the power play. So that can get frustrating at times if you lose the draw and you're chasing the puck down the ice and you got to come back through the neutral zone and get across the offensive blue line again. And maybe you turn it over and, you know, now 30 or 40 seconds is gone and you're getting ready to switch to your second power play unit. So that's been a big one. But the single biggest thing for me has been the net front presence. And I think Mackenzie Weegar has done a better job, as our broadcast partner Megan Mickelson likes to say, sifting pucks into the mixer. He's probably the best at that since Mark Giordano. And I think back to his Norris Trophy season and how good he was at getting pucks through from the blue line. But Mackenzie Weegar's had a knack for doing that all season long. You could argue more at 5-on-5 than on the power play because that's where he scored the vast majority of his goals. But, you know, they're doing a good job getting pucks through the net, but that generally doesn't mean much unless you've got bodies in front of the net. And they've made a commitment to going to the hard areas, and they're getting rewarded for it. So I think now you're seeing a power play that's operating with a bit more confidence too. So I'm sure that helps.
It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills, along with Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg on this Wednesday. Gents, Connor Zary's been back in the lineup now for five games since missing those 8-9 games with the upper body injury he had. Five games, just the 1 point since returning. What have the observations been on Connor Zary since he's come back into this Flames lineup?
Yeah, his play certainly has fallen off. I didn't mind him when he first came back. He wasn't getting rewarded, but he was creating quite a bit. The last two, three games, he really hasn't looked like the same player to me. And there's a few things that I've been wondering about. Number one, is he still dealing with an injury? Is he maybe a little further away from 100% than we think he is? So that could be something. Number two, it's his first season in the NHL. Has he hit a bit of a rookie wall? It happens. And maybe it's more likely to happen if you suffer an injury and now you got to battle to get back under the ice and now you're trying to play catch up with everybody once you do return to action. So I wonder if he's maybe hit a bit of a wall here. And number three, and this only applies to the last two, three games, but he's also been taken off of the Kadri and the kids line. So you've got Nazem Kadri and Martin Pospisil still playing together, but no longer is Connor Zary on the left side of that line. So I do think that whoever has played with Kadri, and to a little bit lesser extent, because they're different types of players, Pospisil, those players have benefited from playing with those two guys with what they bring to the ice. Pospisil is an absolute menace out there. The pace that he plays with, the physicality that he plays with, I really think opens things up for his line mates. Kadri's had, as we've talked about time and time and time again, just a fantastic season. And Wes, you and I were chatting today. He really has been the straw that stirs the drink, regardless of who his wingers have been this season. And I think Zary, while he definitely brought something to that line prior to the injury, since coming back, he just hasn't looked like the same player. So I'm sure he would benefit, like everybody has, from playing with Kadri and Pospisil again. But you know, right now the Flames have a line that they like, and until that one falls off, I don't think he's probably going to get a chance to play in that spot again. So there could be a few things, guys, or maybe it's more than one thing that's impacting Connor Zary right now.
There's sort of two obvious things lacking for me right now, and one of them was, I suppose, confirmed by what Ryan Huska said when he was asked about it earlier today. The pace hasn't been the same for Connor Zary in the last little while, whether that's the layoff that came with the injury, whether it's perhaps some sort of lingering impact of that injury, whether for whatever reason, maybe he's starting to feel the fatigue of the schedule. For whatever reason, the pace hasn't been there. And, you know, the concern in terms of what might limit Connor Zary's upside as an NHLer was always going to be his pace. And so if the pace suddenly goes missing, he's just not the same player. And I think part of the explanation, these two kind of dovetail. The other thing that's missing for me is just the confidence, right? How often did we hear during Connor Zary's great start to his career with the Flames, well, he came up from the Wranglers with a lot of confidence. And he'll tell you that himself. He gets off to a great start. He believes he has a strong training camp. He gets off to a great start in the AHL. He was oozing confidence when he came up to the Flames, and that confidence stuck with him for a long time. And I just haven't seen that confidence since he came back from the injury. Part of that is that the results aren't there. Then he's not attacking the defense in the same way that he would. He doesn't seem to have that same sort of swagger. And that's just an obvious, or that's something that's going to happen for a young guy when the results aren't there. That's something that's going to happen for an old guy when the results aren't there. Nazem Kadri at the start of the season did not play with the same sort of confidence because the results weren't there. But right now it's sort of strikingly absent or lacking, in my opinion anyways, with Connor Zary.
The thing I really have wondered about is, so Zary's first NHL injury, where he misses a significant amount of time, comes in the second half of an NHL season. And he goes down, and the team clearly missed him and what he was bringing prior. And, you know, you're out for a good chunk of time, you know, nine games. Was it eight games he ended up missing?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's good 2 week span that you're out of the lineup. And, you know, as is the case with any situation, you're out for that amount of time. You're trying to work out. You're skating on your own to start with. You're working out in the gym. Like, it's not like you're not working hard, but nothing can replicate A, NHL practice, and B, NHL game action. So you've got that. Then you couple it with two other factors. One is that it's the second half of the season, rather, and we hear from every coach and every player about how an NHL season gradually ramps up, and as it moves closer and closer to the Stanley Cup playoffs, the standard, the pace, the intensity level of the regular season ramps up all along the way. So now you have that. You've taken a player away from 2 weeks. I think for most guys, it would be a little bit more difficult to get back up to speed, but it would be easier for a guy who has done it before. Be easier for a guy who is an NHL veteran or has three or four seasons under his belt. This is the first time Connor Zary has ever missed NHL time, and now he's jumping back in March, and he's jumping back in when the season is moving towards fever pitch as opposed to it still being October, November. And I just wonder how difficult an adjustment that would be for anybody. Like, honestly, take a look at how Jacob Pelche and Kevin Rooney jump back into a season midway through and how different it is. Rooney, NHL veteran, he knew what to expect because he's been there before. I think that there's no coincidence that Jacob Pelche has never jumped back into a season midway through quite like this. And it took, especially coming off that much time off. So I just wonder if that plays into it. The fact this is the first time Zary has ever been thrust back into a season well over half old, and the intensity level just changes that much, and now you're being asked to come in cold and match that pace level. I wonder if there's a little bit to that as well.
You know what, Pat? That's actually a great point. I hadn't Woo-hoo! Thought of that, because
once in a while, baby,
clearly
the old blind squirrel
was able to get up to speed and find his game a lot quicker than Jacob Pelche, who's now trying to find his game at the AHL level. I'm going to add a fourth thing to my list. For the first time this season, Connor Zary looks frustrated to me. And I don't care what you do, it's harder to do if you're frustrated. That frustration just gets in the way of you being at your best. So I think there could be a bunch of factors here, but I'm seeing a frustrated Connor Zary right now. And that might have something to do with all of the other things that we've talked about. But I think as a NHL player, if you're gripping the stick too tight, or you're breaking your stick, as we saw him do last night, you're probably not in the right headspace. So he's got to find his game. If he does that, the confidence will come back, the frustration will go away, and I believe we'll start to see the Connor Zary we did for most of the season. A guy who, when he was healthy, was one of the best rookies in the league this year.
I had a conversation with Connor prior to Saturday's game, and obviously prior to his appearance on After Hours, and you know, one of the things that he said that kind of stuck with me is I asked him about what do you need to get out of the sort of home stretch of the season, and he said, well, I want to prove that I should start the season. Like, I want them to have a job for me to start next season, And I walked away thinking, that's the only guy in Calgary who doesn't think that Connor Zary is guaranteed a roster spot next year. But, you know, suddenly he's not on that line with Kadri and Pospisil. Suddenly the other night he's bumped down to the fourth line in the third period. He's barely touching the ice. And so a guy who's putting pressure on himself to, I suppose, lock up that job heading into training camp next year is suddenly looking around going, where do I fit here? Am I not on Kadri's line anymore? Am I on the fourth line now? And so knowing that that's sort of his mission over the next couple of weeks, I think that helps explain the frustration. I think it helps explain some of the lack of confidence. He's probably for the first time in his brief NHL career looking around and just maybe wondering what's happening a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we hope that that's one of the things that I think could be a real positive for the group in the stretch drive or playing out the string situation that they're in right now. If Connor Zary can rediscover that form that was so important for the Flames earlier in the year, that'd be a real positive for the team in their final eight games of the season, no doubt. Next up is Thursday against the Winnipeg Jets. We all see how they respond after Tuesday's loss to Anaheim. For now, though, Wills, you have yourself a great rest of your Wednesday. We'll talk to you Thursday, hey?
You too, guys. And just to close this out, I would be absolutely stunned if Connor Zary was not in the Flames opening night lineup, barring an injury. But I also think it's a good thing that he doesn't think that spot is a given, and that believes he's got to earn that opportunity. So I think that's the right mindset for a young player to have, and hopefully we start seeing the best out of Connor Zary sometime soon, and hopefully that starts Thursday against the Jets.
Yeah, that's what you want to hear from every rookie or every young kid, isn't it?
Yep. Thank you, Wilsey. We will talk to you on Thursday as we wrap things up on the Daily Flames Roundtable. A couple of texts. This says, Zary's a player that gives and feeds off of emotion and momentum. With maturity, he'll get that figured out. He's a human and hopefully will grow from this. I'm sure he will. The way that he approaches things, even the maturity, just the way that he talks and the way that he goes about his business, I think he will. I'm not worried about the long term.
I was just going to say, buddy, I hope it didn't come across as us being concerned about Connor Zary long term. We haven't seen the same player the past few weeks.
Yep. This is Zary playing with the same players since the trade deadline. Maybe that could be a factor from Brett. For the most part, yeah. Hasn't played as much with Pospisil and Kadri since coming back. And the Mangiapane injury kind of played into that. Mangiapane not playing against St. Louis was when some of the lines were juggled up a little bit. And at the same time, team felt like they needed to juggle up the lines after the loss in Chicago. So we'll see how that continues to play itself out. Right now, the way Kuzmenko is playing with Kadri and Pospisil, maybe Zary doesn't get back there, but at least right away. But not as much anyway since the Mangiapane injury. We'll see if Mangiapane's back Thursday against Winnipeg as well. Thanks to Cam and Connor, our producers this hour. It's Pat and Wes wrapping up this hour on Flames Talk, and the Daily Flames Roundtable was brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish.